Ugly food is one of the topics for this month's Soundbite segment, produced in partnership with Sauce Magazine. Michael and Tara Galina are co-owners of Rooster and the Hen, a culinary concept, they say, that seeks to delight eaters through thoughtfulness for the way our food is grown and raised. After recently moving back to St. Louis, where Michael grew up, the couple has held a series of pop-up dinners at a variety of places in the city. Michael is the former chef at Dan Barber's well-known farm-to-table restaurant, Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York, and Tara was the senior captain of service there. Contributor Steve Potter talked to the Galinas about how they're finding ways to use what some people consider food waste. But he first asked Sauce Magazine managing editor Heather Hughes about why she wrote in her April article that the American food system is broken.
Specifically regarding waste, Americans throw out an unbelievable amount of food from the farm to home kitchens and in restaurants every year.
Now, are you talking about food on the plate they haven't eaten or food that's, you know, is eliminated in the process of making the meal?
Both, actually. But regarding the Galinas, the feature was talking more about food that's lost between the farm and professional restaurants. So chefs are working more and more with farms directly to reduce that waste.
So you mean if a farmer is supplying broccoli, they might cut off the bottom stalk of the broccoli before they send it, and that's the food that's disappearing?
Sometimes, yeah.
Right?
And also just food that's undesirable, like the example that I used was ugly carrots. Carrots don't always grow in pretty perfect lines, and often farmers know that nobody's going to buy a really knobbly, ugly carrot, so instead of even trying to sell it to people at all, they will throw it in the compost or feed it to pigs. That's just lost to human consumption completely.
Well, let's explain a little bit of what the Galinas have been doing here, pop-up restaurants, for those that might not know that concept.
Since January, have been putting on small ticketed dinners at different locations around town. There have been some at Schlafly Bottle Works, in Juniper, the space upstairs that they have there, and working with the owners of those restaurants or venues to put on like a mini one-night restaurant.
And how'd you first hear about Rooster and the Hen?
Well, we were very excited. We heard that the Galinas were coming from Blue Hill at Stone Barns, which is Dan Barber's world-famous restaurant in New York, which is really well-known as a leading farm-to-table restaurant. And Dan Barber has written a bunch of opinion pieces in the New York Times. He has a best-selling book called The Third Plate, Field Notes on the Future of Food. So anybody interested in farm-to-table or just fine dining knows that place. And when we heard the chef de cuisine, Michael, and then Tara, who is high up in service, were coming to St. Louis, we were ready to see what they were going to do.
Well, let's welcome them now, Michael and Tara Galina. Hi, welcome to the show.
Oh,
hi.
Thank you for having us.
You, in your own words, talk about flipping meat and potatoes. So what do you mean by that philosophy? What is that?
I mean, I think it's the whole idea of instead of having this perception of you have to have a large cut of a protein on a plate garnished with different vegetables, it's kind of, you know, making the vegetable more of the star of the show and utilizing offcuts of meat like beef neck or shanks, heart, offcuts to kind of accentuate what else is on the plate.
Tara, is that highlighting vegetable, is that always an easy task? Because I can tell you that I have friends that I can't find anything green on their plate to begin with.
Absolutely. And it doesn't always have to be green. It can be a different color, but it's more of the perception that to eat sustainably now, having a protein-centric diet is not really the way to go forward. It doesn't mean don't eat meat. We are not vegetarians. We eat meat all the time.
I thought we had to have protein. That's important.
And you do, but it's more about the ratios. So kind of like what Michael said. So we definitely recognize we're coming into a Midwestern city that is quote-unquote meat and potatoes, right, as many people would probably describe themselves. So our idea is to really take that and show people how interesting, exciting, and really mostly delicious it can be to eat in sort of different proportions.
And where are you from originally, Tara?
I'm from South Florida.
But Michael, you are from here originally, the whole high school thing, right?
Oh, yeah, Brentwood High School, proud, go Eagles.
So you know all about the meat and potatoes thing. What made you come to a meat and potatoes town to hide the meat?
Because I just see it as a way of the future of how people, you know, should be eating or need to be eating. You know, and I think it all goes back to, you know, we have to support the entire farm, you know, and the entire product. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the farm. more than just the pork chops from the pig and the sirloins and, you know, strip steaks and stuff like that. You have to look at the whole animals. You've got to look at the entire vegetables. To be sustainable, you have to think in that, I guess, that line.
So what you said about the broccoli is a good example. Broccoli stem. I actually think that's one of Michael's most delicious dishes that he does, is a dish of just a whole, almost like a steak, but it's the broccoli stem. And the rest of the broccoli sort of accompanied on the plate. But
what's your secret to that?
You know, it's delicious.
Peeling it is the secret.
Yeah, having the hands to peel it. But even just slicing it thin, you could slice it thin and mix it in with stir fries and a lot of things. I think it's just thinking a little bit outside the box of how we can utilize cores and stems. And I think if people got more money, you know, or more worth from the product, it makes it worth going to the farmer's market and paying a little bit more for that product.
Heather, you would know, how common is this in St. Louis now, the whole concept of putting less emphasis on the protein?
Increasingly common. I think that it's a broader trend in American cuisine in general, this move towards using whole animals, which means more parts, which means less meat on the plate. Like, you can't just serve only steaks if you're trying to use a whole animal.
Mm-hmm.
And then working more vegetables into each dish, as Michael was saying, is the star of the show. I think a lot of farm-to-table restaurants in St. Louis will be trying to do that, just because you have to do that in order to have a farm-to-table restaurant, to be working directly with farmers. You can't be throwing away most of the vegetable or most of the cow.
But I have a sense that you two plan to take this concept maybe to a new level here?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're trying to make it scary and unapproachable, you know, and it's not just going to be tiny food on a plate and a long series tasting menu. You know, our goal is to create a restaurant that is a place you'd want to come back to maybe a couple times a week. The menu is going to change so often, really just based on what's coming in from these local farms, you know, and the people that we're working with. Even throughout the night, you know, you could have, if you're ordering the, you know, whatever pork entree that we might have on the menu, your first couple tables might get some of the loin and some of the leg. And then a little bit later on in the night, you might see some of the shoulder and a rib or whatever else they've got going on. And it's kind of being open to kind of seeing what they can do in the kitchen with whatever's available, which does force you to change things quite a bit.
So you were both at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, and Michael, you were the chef, and Tara,
yes.
You?
I was a service captain, so I wore a lot of hats there. But
and on a personal note, that's where you guys met.
Yeah.
We did. So I was supposed to go there for 6 months for an apprenticeship, and I fell in love with the place, and I also fell in love with him. So
wow.
I was there for 3 years. I was supposed to be 6 months.
So you love Michael and vegetables.
Yes. <Right. laughs> Yeah. You could put it that way.
What did you learn from Dan Barber up there? I imagine some of this came from his philosophy, did it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's definitely my mentor, and he taught me a lot of ways to, like, really be creative with vegetables and think outside the box. I mean, you know, being up on the farm up there, we never really ordered anything. I mean, it was just kind of like what came to the back door. That's what we had to utilize, whether it was ugly carrots, you know, or 10 different kinds of lettuces that you had to – it was either that you used it or, you know, they went into compost. And that – your goal is you don't want, as a chef, anything to go into compost because that's your food cost. And, you know, so you figure out ways to utilize that product. And, you know, I think he also taught me that there's a lot more to it than just being a chef by creating great food. It's also – being able to reach out with supporting, I guess, a message and a cause and, you know, and food waste being.
Let me pick up on what you just said, because in the article that Heather wrote about you, Michael, you talk about, I think you're just referring to it, that the best ingredients isn't all you need for a great dish. The dish has to mean something?
Yeah, I think it has to, like, in a way, support a message, you know, and that's, you know, if it is an ugly carrot, it's like, it kind of, you know, it sounds funny to have, like, what is an ugly carrot, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense in the fact that a lot of farmers have bruised vegetables, and they don't feel like, if they bring it to the market, people will be like, oh, why do they have those bruised vegetables, or, you know, flea beetle radishes that were attacked by pests. But, you know, on an organic farm, that's just kind of what happens. I mean, you have pests intrude on your property. It doesn't mean that product is lesser of quality. It just looks a little bit different. And I think if you can, you know, take that a step further and be a chef that focuses on making that, when I say star of the show, I see, I like put it kind of front and center to where, you know, you see it you see that it's, you know, not the most attractive thing sometimes, but it's beautiful in its own way and it's delicious.
Tara, I'm guessing, though, it's beautiful by the time it ends up on the plate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they have to know what to do with it. I mean, that's a lot of it. But I think, you know, with the whole message idea, there's, I think, small ways that chefs can influence the dining culture and then ultimately influence sort of the consumer culture. Because if something is seen as, oh, well, that's kind of interesting, and I always pick around those things in the market bin that don't look perfect, you know, but maybe I should try to be a little more open-minded. And slowly but surely, I think some of these things sort of trickle down and through the system. And then, you know, hopefully there becomes a market for ugly fruits and vegetables, which is, you know, certainly a big movement.
Well, you talk about the farm-to-table movement. And there was a gentleman, Sam Hilmer of Claverack Farms, and he was on this segment some time ago. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the relationship between farmers and chefs. And I thought about that, too. Like you, Michael, some fancy chef from New York. And now you're dealing with some outstate farmer. Are you all on the same page?
We're trying to be.
Sam made the point that a lot of farmers had problems because they find chefs difficult to work with for whatever reason.
Well, and I think that's what we're trying to do a little bit differently is, for us, it's more about the relationship with us and the farmers. You know, we want to build relationships first. That's why we didn't come in and just want to open up a restaurant. We really wanted to take our time and do the due diligence of meeting the farmers and, you know, seeing what their needs are. I mean, I think to make this whole thing work, you have to have this relationship with the farmers to where you can call them and have more of – have the farmer drive your menu more than you drive itself, because – it's easy to go and just pick out your tomatoes and pick out your zucchini and create a menu around it. But I want to more like call the farmer and be like, what do you need me to use? Mm. Do you have, you know, 10 pounds of radishes that you just don't think you can sell? Or, you know, did we get a huge rain the other night and you've got raspberries that are soaked that you can't bring to the market? There's ways to utilize that kind of stuff, like preservation, you know, whether it's fermenting or whatever. It's, you know, making charcuterie with offcuts of meat that maybe, you know, a farmer is like, I have a whole half of a pig that I can't sell. I need somebody to utilize it. And, you know, there's ways to do that.
I would think a farmer would be delighted that someone might buy his ugly radish that he wasn't able to sell before.
It takes a commitment
And trust.
Yeah, and trust that you build hopefully over time, because, you know, it is a lot of money. It's not always easy for a chef or for a small restaurant to say, I will buy all that, because what you're buying it for is later. So mm-hmm. when you look at your food costs, you're thinking, okay, well, I just spent $300 on a product that I might not even touch until the winter. But that's what we want to base our winter menu off of, is really kind of taking advantage of some of these things that we find in the spring, summer, and fall, and having that really highlight and be an exciting part of a winter menu.
When you first, when the both of you first moved here late last year, before you started the pop-up thing, what did you do to sort of check out the scene, figure out what's going on, and how you wanted to fit in?
We ate a lot. Yeah. We still are. We are trying to tackle every restaurant in town. But, you know, I think eating out is one thing. The chef community was very welcoming to us, and just the overall restaurant community, which was huge. So they made some great introductions for us. The pop-up dinners we've been doing have really been about this investment in the community and getting to know people and letting them get to know us.
Right.
We sort of have this sort of already a little kind of group of people that have come back to several dinners, which is exciting, and they've been able to tell their friends, and we've been able to get direct feedback from them, which is
valuable. Let me ask you as an outsider, and I won't ask you, Michael, since you're from here. You might be a little biased, but Heather, you're not from here. So we like to think, if you read Sauce Magazine, you get the impression that our food scene's pretty good and getting better all the time. As an outsider, what do you think?
Well, that's why we're here. I mean, I suppose, could have decided to go open a restaurant anywhere and made a go at it, you know, but it felt like there was a real opportunity here to get involved in something that is so, it's so tight-knit, but it's very, very much on the rise, and I think has the potential to be a real food destination to people outside of the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. So for each pop-up, is the menu entirely different? And give me an example maybe of some of the things the last few months that you're real particularly proud of.
It's definitely different every single time, because it's really, you know, I don't even focus on the menus until days out, because you don't know what's going to be available, whether it's going to the market or just talking to a producer or a farmer. Well, you know, what they're going to have available, you know, the week before could completely be different 5 days later.
Okay, for example, I guess was last week, you did a pop-up at Niche.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was on the menu?
It was getting a little bit greener, but like, you know, like I kind of said at that dinner, it's a very difficult time of the year as a chef to create a menu because there's not a whole lot. You know, if you're not a very seasonally locally sourced restaurant right now, you're associating the warm weather. You hear spring, you think peas, you think asparagus and all that, and that's just not the case right now. It's not popping up. So, you know, it was kind of the first flashes of spring that Nate and I kind of focused on, like green garlic, spring onions, but then also looking kind of outside the box. What's growing in the woods? What are you foraging for? Whether it's mushrooms, the first like flush of shiitake mushrooms. So that's like one dish I did was the first flush of shiitake mushrooms. You go to the first market of the year at Schlafly last week, and all you see is lettuce or different greens.
You're going to do another pop-up on Monday?
We are. We're doing one at Planter's House, which is a fantastic cocktail and libation establishment. A beautiful space. We're partnering up with another couple from Kansas City.
And just briefly, why do you think these guys are going to make it?
I think they have the talent. Simply put, I guess. They're coming in at the right time, doing the right thing, and they have the skills to do it.
That's Sauce Magazine Managing Editor Heather Hughes talking with St. Louis On the Air contributor Steve Potter for this month's edition of Sound Bites. Steve was also joined by Michael and Tara Galina, the couple behind Rooster and the Hen, a culinary concept that, among other things, seeks to use the parts of vegetables and proteins that some consider food waste. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.